This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. North America is pretty big. For all its vastness, though, there's not a whole lot of prairie left. That is a problem for flora and fauna, for plants and pollinators, and it's an issue that traces right back to humans. A group of scientists in St. Louis, equipped with very small tweezers and a great deal of patience, is trying to help one obscure but important plant overcome the chain of challenges associated with lost habitat. It's called Mead's milkweed, and it's the primary source of food for monarch caterpillars.
Oh, hey, little caterpillar. You're probably wondering why I'm out here. Well, things aren't looking so good for prairie species like you. So right now I'm hand pollinating the milkweed so that hopefully we'll have some reproduction. And hopefully you'll have a fighting chance of surviving.
And that was Christy Edwards, a research scientist and conservation geneticist at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Her work is featured in a new documentary, Intervention. The short film follows local scientists who head into some of the last remaining prairies in North America to undertake the painstaking work of hand-pollinating Mead's milkweed. Christy joins us now. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also with us is the film's co-creator, Kate Grumke, who also happens to be my STLPR colleague. Thanks for joining us, Kate.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basics. Christy, what is Mead's milkweed?
Well, it's a species of milkweed. It's federally threatened. And it used to occur across 6 states across the Midwest. And now it's down to 4 states, and there's 2 states where it's almost completely extirpated. So the main populations are now in Kansas and Missouri, and it's just a really iconic plant of the prairies. It's only found in prairies and then some glades in southwestern Missouri. But otherwise, it's really declining, unfortunately.
Is there anything about the way that it looks that sets it apart, you know, from other kinds of milkweed? Or
yes, it's very distinctive. It has greenish yellow flowers, and they actually hang upside down, whereas most of the other milkweeds have flowers that are right side up.
Mm-hmm. Why has Mead's milkweed suffered, and what suffers in turn?
So it has suffered because of habitat loss. It's always been a species, I think, that has been infrequent across prairies. It's kind of a species that occurs in low population densities. And, you know, the issue is that, you know, 1-2% of prairies are remaining. And so if you think about an infrequent species that is experiencing massive habitat loss, it's just, you know, the populations have become very small and fragmented. Not a lot of gene flow happening between, or pollination happening between prairies. And because of that, things that depend on it also are becoming threatened. So Mead's milkweed is one of many milkweed species that monarch butterflies, their larval stage feeds on. But, you know, the decline of prairies and the decline of milkweed is a problem for all these other species, monarchs, other insects that use them as a food source.
Mm-hmm. Kate, how did the plight of Mead's milkweed get onto your radar?
So I actually heard about it from the Missouri Botanical Garden. Obviously, my job as an environmental reporter, I'm in touch with them a lot about the science that they're working on. And this was going to be a big project in Kansas, multiple hours drive away, and it was going to take weeks to cover, essentially. And so it's not really the type of thing that lends itself well to radio necessarily. And my husband is a documentary filmmaker, and so we decided, hey, we're invited to go along. Let's make a documentary about this. And we actually initially wanted to do something about monarchs. We were pretty focused on monarchs and prairies and conservation. And then we got out with Christy and her team, and they kind of told us, you know, the monarchs are cool, But there's a lot of other really interesting stuff going on in prairies. Mm-hmm. And maybe you should consider expanding how you're thinking about conservation a little bit. And so we went from wanting to make a project all about monarchs to making a project about Christy and her team's work.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about prairie habitat, and we're talking about this decline, how do you explain the degree of loss that is happening, you know, to a layperson, Christy?
Well, I mean, there's just nothing left. You know, these little tiny fragments. You know, you find this little patchwork of fragments scattered, you know, across several states. But basically these fragments are surrounded by housing tracts and cornfields and, you know, you name it, but very little other prairie fragments, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to drive far to get there, and then we had to drive far between the sites. So that really shocked me. I hadn't really seen that because Mead's milkweed really only occurs in original prairie, right? It's not in restored prairie like we are all trying to do in our front yards here. And so it's very hard to find that, and it's very fragmented.
What are some of the important distinctions between restored prairie and original?
So I think it has to do with the soils mostly. So Mead's milkweed will never occur in a prairie where it's been tilled. Mm-hmm. So as long as the soil has remained intact for, you know, eternity, basically it will. You can find it there. Sometimes you can find it there. But if it's ever been tilled and then used as a cornfield or something else, it will never be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About how long did you have to drive, Kate, you and Kyle, between these original prairie patches?
Some of them it's more than an hour. And in some cases, so the scientists actually stay in an Airbnb and we were staying with them, which was a really interesting way to see how field science happens. And it would be like a few hours between sites. Sometimes they're staying in different places to be able to hit the different ones. One of the coolest ones was, what is the prairie park in southwestern Missouri? They have buffalo there, which was
Prairie State Park.
State Park. That, I think, was my most memorable site that we saw. But some of them were just in, like, municipal parks near Kansas City. Some are on people's farms. So it's really a diverse land ownership situation, too.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of challenges does that present for you in your work, Christy?
Yeah, the logistics are pretty difficult. And, you know, in fact, there's actually a set of populations that are in kind of the opposite corner of Missouri. And so, I mean, during the flowering season, you know, we'll be driving all over Kansas and Missouri, you know, for 3 weeks straight. It's pretty challenging.
Yeah,
there's even, like, not in the documentary, there's plenty of trials and tribulations in the documentary. But while we were out with them, a scene that didn't make it. They use these, like, wedding gift bags, essentially, to put them over the flower to keep the seeds.
Oh, right.
So you see those in the film. They're something you would see as, like, a giveaway at a wedding. But at one point, they ran out of them, and so we had to go to the nearest, like, Hobby Lobby to find wedding supplies to do the work. And that whole process set us back by, like, 2 hours. So
easily, yeah.
There's so many things that can go wrong in field science, and when you're in sites that are so spread out like that, it just adds a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, like, there was one time when we were, I think it was, like, the first day you were out there, there was this huge, huge thunderstorm. And it was just, like, pouring rain, and, like, the wind was blowing, like, 60 miles an hour. And I was like, oh, my God, there was almost a tornado. I was like, welcome to field work. Poor Kate.
So then those little bags, and I remember from watching the film, I didn't realize that's what they were. And looking at the flags that were sticking out of a backpack, that it reminded me of a bouquet. So that sort of there's a connection there. Now, when you watch a documentary like the one you and Kyle have made, Kate, it's easy to think of all of this being quite simple. And you have described the kinds of complications that are involved. Was there anything else that surprised you about, you know, the day-to-day reality of the work, you know, Christy and her colleagues were doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard. Like, we went out the very first day, horrible thunderstorm. And then from there on, I feel like it just was so physically hard. There are so many ticks in this environment. So the scientists were telling us, like, here's exactly how you treat your clothes with permethrin. This is what you have to wear to make sure you don't get eaten. And then it's super hot. A prairie doesn't really have any shade, ideally, unless there's an invasive tree situation going on. But that meant that we had to be really careful about getting sunburns and staying hydrated. It's really, really physically demanding work. And I think that you can see the devotion the scientists have to this, that they're willing to kind of put their bodies on the line and go out and do this.
Mm-hmm. What was it about Kate and Kyle being with you that made it feel, you know, worth it for your work to be put into this very particular format, into documentary film?
Well, actually, when we were first starting, they were making a documentary about monarchs. So we were just like, oh, there's a monarch there.
Just
there's a monarch there.
Yeah.
We were out there like showing them kind of the focus of their documentary. And so we were really kind of just helping them out. Like, you know, we were going to be out there and, you know, these beautiful prairies. And, you know, so that was kind of how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they kind of got intrigued by what we were actually doing. I mean, they were trying to make it about conservation, and, you know, we were doing conservation as well, you know, just kind of a different prairie species. So I think hopefully, I mean, it seemed like it piqued their interest.
We're talking today with Kate Grumke, co-creator of Intervention, which is a new documentary film. It follows local scientists hand-pollinating the endangered plant Mead's milkweed. The film will premiere Sunday afternoon at High Point Theater as part of the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase. And also with us is Christy Edwards. She's one of the research scientists featured in the film. Christy, how long have you been doing this work?
I've been doing work on conservation biology, plant conservation biology, for about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Mead's milkweed, I started working on it in 2017.
Okay, so it's been some time.
Yeah.
And it is exacting work. So in the introduction, I mentioned, you know, tiny tweezers.
Yeah.
About how long do you spend on a single plant? You also mentioned that it's upside down.
Yeah.
In order to extract what you need and then to bring back to St. Louis and to the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Okay, so we're doing hand pollinations. So the actual reason why we were doing them is we were trying to see if the plants were limited by the amount of pollen they have. And so we were trying to leave some of the flowers on the flower. So there's a flower head, and they may have like 10 actual individual flowers on the flower head. And so we were trying to pollinate 3 out of those 10 to 15 flowers on the flower head. And it would take, you know, depending on the maturity of the flowers, it would take anywhere between 5 and 30 minutes per flower head. And we'd have to kind of move between them. So you have to take the pollen from one flower, which involves essentially taking this thing that's called a pollinary. It's like a little packet of pollen,
mm-hmm,
with your tweezers, and we would put them into a tube, and then you have to take it to a different plant because they can't self-pollinate. And then we would have to insert the pollen into the flower. It's not like a normal plant where pollen just kind of gets brushed up against it.
Mm-hmm.
It's this very specific pollination system, so it's very difficult to pollinate. Like I said in the movie, I think this is a uniquely difficult enterprise.
Right, right.
You know, and these things are like, you know, less, like probably an eighth of an inch, less than an eighth of an inch in, you know, the flower itself, the whole flower. And the pollinaria is like, you know, itty bitty, like tiny, tiny little specks.
Like tip of a pencil.
Yeah.
We actually had to get a special lens to be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a macro lens so that we could actually film how tiny the pollen was.
I mean, how did it make you feel to be part of this process?
I mean, part of it, I was like, I remember asking you guys at dinner, like, why is this worth it?
Yeah.
Like, how is this, and what was, I remember what your response was, but what did you say to that?
I mean, I think, you know, the whole purpose of our work is to try to figure out, like, why the plant isn't reproducing. It's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's worth it because at some point, hopefully we'll get insights into managing these plants or managing the prairies so that we can actually get to the point where the plants can become self-sustaining populations again. So we want to get them healthy and thriving so that we don't have to intervene anymore. And so that's kind of our main focus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How long ago were they self-sustaining, Christine?
There's actually a few self-sustaining populations, but I would say the species overall, I have no idea. These are really long-lived plants. So, we actually see plants in the wild that are probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they were 25 to 30, even to 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the remnants of these like former ecosystems. What we're not seeing is like recruitment, recruitment like where we get new seedlings growing and like forming, you know, like forming contributing members as to the populations. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kate, you and Kyle started with monarchs. And from what I understand, Christy, your interest is more in the Mead's milkweed because of your plant mm-hmm. focus. But there was something that you had mentioned, Kate, to our producer, Emily Woodbury, where you compared monarchs to polar bears. What was it that you said, and why is that relevant to our having a conversation about this on our show?
Yeah, I think that monarchs are kind of the polar bears of the prairies. So they're this iconic animal that everyone cares about, everyone wants to protect. But sometimes the way that we go about trying to do that isn't exactly right. And so I think that this film really helped me understand that if you care about monarchs, you can't just plant milkweed in your yard. You need to be thinking about how do we make sure that there's more habitat for monarchs on their entire journey that they make from Mexico to Canada. And I also think there's this question of charisma in conservation. So the animals that are the most fluffy or interesting or cute, or the plants that do the most for humans, those are the ones that we care about conserving. And I think that can be the wrong way to think about it. And so going into the prairie thinking, I care about monarchs, and coming out of it thinking, we need to conserve plants, mm-hmm. was a really good flip in my mind. And I hope people will watch the film and walk away thinking the same way.
Mm-hmm. So monarch Riz is what you what you're kind of banking on. And I understand that the part that we heard at the beginning of this segment where you are speaking to a caterpillar.
Yeah.
Was that your idea, Kate?
Yeah. So the film is supposed to be from the perspective of the monarch. And mm-hmm. so there's a few things that we do to kind of achieve that. We have a lot of drone shots where we're trying to mimic what flight might look like. And then we also decided to have the scientists speak to a monarch caterpillar. There's no actual caterpillar. They're looking at the camera. But we didn't want to do, you know, formal sit-down interviews or anything like that. But there's key information people need. And so we decided, you know, we kind of owe these insects an explanation mm-hmm. as humans. So maybe we should have these scientists explain what's going on. And yeah, so we asked them to do it and they agreed. And I am curious, though, Christy, I've never asked you, what did you think when I asked you to pretend to talk to a fake caterpillar?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I was just like, okay, I don't really talk to milkweed or milkweeds or caterpillars in the prairie while I'm trying to hand pollinate Mead's milkweed. I was like, I don't know if this is going to really, because she basically just asked us to kind of improv, you know, what would you say if you were going to talk to a caterpillar? And so I was like, okay, I'll just give it a shot. And, you know, I mean, I felt pretty silly, honestly, but, mm-hmm. I actually think it turned out pretty well in the film, surprisingly.
Well, and for me,
have to trust.
Yeah.
Right, as someone watching it, and I watched it with my 10-year-old, it was something that he just sort of took for granted, like, oh, this is part of the film and of the message. You and Kyle Kate, you filmed some pretty incredible shots of the monarch's life cycle. How did you get that footage?
Yes, so we got that thanks to the help of Tad Gankowski at the Butterfly House. And he is a regular Slota guest because he is a really interesting local entomologist. Mm-hmm. But he actually helped us. He put bags on some milkweed at the Butterfly House to help basically contain a couple caterpillars for us. And then we got to film. It's mostly just one caterpillar that you're seeing go into a chrysalis and emerge. So that was really special. There was a 2-week period where it was in the chrysalis and we didn't know when it was going to come out, because that's dependent on, according to Tad, all kinds of things like warmth and hours of sunlight. And so he was texting us every morning a picture of the chrysalis, like, all right, still good, still good.
Okay.
And then there was a day where it started to turn and it got darker, and he was like, you guys need to drive out here right now. And
okay.
So we sat there and waited for a few hours, and eventually the caterpillar emerged from its chrysalis. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful butterfly.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I'd ever seen that happen. It's kind of a rare but amazing biological miracle.
Yeah. Well, and shout out to Tad the Bug Dad, who is he is a favorite here on the show. Now, Christy, I understand that the hand pollination work that we see you do in the film, that it's part of a 4-year grant mm-hmm. that's finishing up this year.
Mm-hmm.
So what is next for you all?
We have to finish the grant. But I think we have some interesting questions about, for example, how management will affect the milkweed and milkweed reproduction. I'm also interested in understanding how, like, for example, soil nutrients and also like microbes that associate with the plants may affect flowering and reproduction of these. So I think we have some things coming up mm-hmm. in the future, hopefully.
How does a film like this serve to further the work that you have been doing, Christy?
Well, I think, like Kate was saying, I'm hoping that, you know, a film like this, it will draw focus to the plants as well as to the monarchs that live on them. And I think any opportunity that we have to highlight our conservation work and to get it out there, you know, and to kind of stress the importance of plants, I think we're really excited by that.
Mm-hmm. And there, I think, is an important distinction to be made between the work that you do here at St. Louis Public Radio as a journalist and what you have done, you know, with Kyle as a documentary filmmaker. What is that distinction and why is it important, Kate?
Yeah, I think a lot of what happened in the film, like asking Christy to talk to a fake bug, we don't fake things in journalism. So I'm very committed to the truth in my day job, but outside of that, if I'm making a documentary, this is my first time directing a documentary, but the focus is much more on art, on getting across emotions that people might feel as they're enjoying something in an entertaining way. And so, it was very different to ask a scientist to fake something and to fake it myself, but that's kind of what you're able to do when you're making something that's a little more artistic and a little less journalistic.
Mm-hmm. And short of going out with you, Christy, and the other scientists with tweezers and those wedding gift little bags, mm-hmm. what can everyday people do?
Well, you're talking about that, your front yard. I mean, planting natives is never a bad thing, especially if you go to like local growers. I think overall that generally helps our local pollinators and ecosystems, which benefit the plants. In terms of conservation, any sort of work that supports prairie conservation, land conservation, supporting things like the Nature Conservancy that do land conservation is helpful. Supporting the Missouri Botanical Garden mm-hmm. financially or by becoming a member is helpful. So I think there's a lot of things that people can do.
Christy Edwards is a research scientist and conservation geneticist at the Missouri Botanical Garden, and Kate Grumke is one of the filmmakers behind the short documentary Intervention and STLPR's senior environment and data reporter. Kate and Christy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Intervention will premiere Sunday afternoon at High Point Theater as part of the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase. It will also play on November 7th at the Mound City Film Festival in St. Louis in November.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.